Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey hustlers, we know that this 2024, the entrepreneurial journey is filled with challenges. An often overlooked aspect is the time-consuming task of processing payroll and managing government requirements. And did you know that the average admin spends a whopping 50 hours per month dealing with just government compliance? That's time you could be spending on growing your business, or let's be honest, taking a well-deserved break. But fear not, we got a game changer for you. Introducing Sprout Solutions and their tailored solutions for MSMEs called the Payroll Starter. With Sprout Solutions Payroll Starter, you can finally reclaim your time and get your life back on track. Say goodbye to the stress of remembering tax dates or worrying about missed payroll runs. This bundle is designed to make your life easier and your business more efficient. And here's the best part. The cost starts just at 5,000 pesos per month for businesses with up to 10 employees. Yep, you heard that right. That's just 5,000 pesos per month. So why spend another minute drowning in payroll paperwork when Sprout can revolutionize the way you manage your payroll and government requirements? Take the first step towards a more efficient business today. Visit sprout.ph/payrollstartermonthly5k. If you missed that, don't worry. We have it in the description box of this episode, so click that too. And again, big shout out to Sprout Solutions because your time is too valuable to be spent on paperwork. Reclaim it with their Payroll Starter. Now let's begin this episode.
The Hustle Share podcast is brought to you by PDAX. PDAX is a homegrown cryptocurrency exchange that offers the best rates among local cryptocurrency exchanges. Download the PDAX app now on the Google Play Store, App Store, or Huawei App Gallery. Start trading Bitcoin, Ethereum, and other cryptocurrencies for as low as 50 pesos by signing up on podlink.co/hustleshare PDAX. Also powered by Podmachine, the simplest way to grow and edit your podcast. Sign up now at podmachine.com and use the code HustleShare to get one free edit.
If I would have to spend 3-4 hours of my day just shipping something, it would just be a blocker and it would prevent people from going online. So I knew that I had to build something that would make it easier, more affordable for people to kind of not have to worry about that shipping part.
Welcome to HustleShare, the podcast that features the daily grinds of unique hustlers around the world to show not our differences, but that our hustles are very much alike. Now here is your host, Ronster Baityong.
Welcome to the latest episode of Hustle Share Podcast. We have another OG. This guy's an OG that I've heard of for a long time. Never gotten a chance to actually talk to you. So shout out to my good brother, Christian Blanquera, who used to be doing Openovate. I don't know what you're calling what you're doing now, but shout out to you if you're listening. Again, we got acquired together last decade ago, just several years ago, with Chatbot PH and then Openovate and Yali. But without further ado, I need to mention the man of the hour, Mr. Bjorn Pardo of AHG Lab. Bjorn, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for having me.
Again, mad respect. I've heard a lot of good things about you from my man Christian. And again, the resume speaks for itself, right? And whatnot. But before we talk about your amazing career and all the hustles you've done in between, I need to ask you the million-dollar question. Bjorn, what's your hustle?
All right. Well, first of all, thanks for having me on the show. I've been a big fan of the show for a while now and definitely enjoyed, you know, all of the interviews that you've conducted.
Thank you.
But yeah, I mean, as for my hustle, so I'm one of the co-founders of AHG Lab. Mm-hmm. You know, what we're doing at AHG Lab is we're really trying to find and empower this new influx of entrepreneurs and founders and really help them build the next generation of tech ventures in the Philippines.
Nice. That's amazing. All right. We'll delve into that because, again, this hustle of you creating a leading a venture builder and creating companies at scale is not by accident because you've done it before. Again, one of the few OGs who've done it and thrived in it because, again, this guy bootstrapped, acquired, and whatnot. But before I get carried away, Bjorn, I need you to buckle up because we're going to have to ride the Hustle Share time machine. All right. Because again, Bjorn, before we started, I was being the borderline creep that I was, researching on my chest. We're researching on previous features of you and whatnot. And I saw there that you were selling stuff on eBay way back. But before we even did that, let me just walk through the origin story. Was entrepreneurship or startup something that you had in mind very early on? Or if not, how did you evolve or get into this path?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question because, you know, to be honest, I am still searching for the real answer, right? Mm. You know, entrepreneurship, I mean, I never really wanted to be, I mean, at a young age, I don't remember really wanting to be an entrepreneur particularly, right? But, you know, when I look back, you know, there were some, I guess, glimpses of entrepreneurship as a young kid. And maybe I'll share a story that maybe sure. will not come up in any of the research that you've done.
All right, there you go. Hustle Share exclusive
Exactly,
here.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, as a kid, I'm a 90s kid. And growing up in the 90s, you know, comic books and basketball cards and sports cards were all the rage during that time. So, you know, of course, those are definitely one of my hobbies. But, you know, kind of growing up in the 90s and being interested in those things and kind of looking back at, you know, the industry as a whole, you would see, oh, you know, the rookie card of Michael Jordan sold for whatever, you know, $1 million, or the first appearance of Spider-Man, you know, selling for this, right? So that got me interested in, I guess, making money, right? Mm. So in the 90s, you know, although I was interested in comic books and sports, I was collecting because I enjoyed it. But at the same time, I was also collecting as an investment.
Wow.
And so those were, you know, I guess, you know, it started off with that, you know, really just trying to find, you know, things that I could collect or acquire and then maybe sell for a higher amount in the future. So
nice.
That's a little bit of an inside scoop into, you know, how I got, you know, into entrepreneurship.
And that's already a precursor to like selling on eBay. Cause if you have an eye for stuff that people want, right, then the only thing is eBay didn't just becomes a channel. But before eBay, were there any other hustles or did you get into tech? Because as I'm looking at your LinkedIn, being the creep that I am a little bit, you also are into dev work. You also knew how to code. Or is this something you developed over time already?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm not going to say that I know how to code. I tried to learn, right? I definitely tried to learn. I mean, I was always interested in building things when I, you know, first got started in, you know, building ventures. Mm-hmm. And I would always have to, you know, talk with developers and engineers. And I always really wanted to get my hands super dirty in things. So I spent a little bit of time, you know, I took a little bit of a break. You know, maybe this is going a little bit too far into the future, but I'll just kind of you know, tell you a little bit about it. I don't remember what year it was. Maybe it was like the mid 2010s or something, where I really wanted to spend some time and learn how to code. So I took 3 months off and went to a boot camp. Learned how to code, and you know, I could build an MVP. But what I soon realized was that, you know, if I really wanted to be good at this, I would have to spend time and. I don't know. I had to choose. Like, did I want to kind of spend time building more ventures or kind of learning how to code a little more? And I had to choose kind of building ventures. Yeah.
Yeah. And you have to stick to your superpower because at the end of the day, right, as founders, you develop that superpower and you realize that, you know what? as a legit founder, you develop probably 3 to 4 or 5 superpowers at max, but you can't be a jack of all trades and master of none. You have to specialize somewhere because that's where you can contribute most to your team. But that's what I want to now understand. You said that, okay, coding's out the window. You tried it, but let's go back to the time machine a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
What was the very first few hustles that became real? Because again, eBay, I saw eBay. What were the first things? And then how did that lead into the first gig, I guess, or business that you made?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I was in the US from, I guess, the late 90s to early 2000s. And this was like in a time when e-commerce was booming in the US, like the early stages of e-commerce in the US.
Nice.
And, you know, I was just, you know, I've always, you know, ever since as a young kid, I guess I've been exposed to tech early on. Like, I think in the US, I grew up in the US. And as a young teenager, I think we were one of the first households to have internet in the early 90s.
Wow.
Before it was called the internet. I forgot what it was called, but you know, I just remember seeing, you know, like Toys R Us on my computer and like, oh shit, like this is amazing, right? yeah. So, I mean, I've always been interested in tech. And so, you know, in my early teens, early 20s or late teens, early 20s, I discovered eBay. Nice. And I didn't know what it was. I would just always see it online. I'm like, I gotta check this out. What's this all about? And then I just saw a bunch of people. I mean, this was like super early days, so maybe many of your listeners probably will not know what I'm talking about. But you know, what was being sold on eBay at the time that interested me was these CDs of wholesale lists, and you know, where you can gain access to all of these different suppliers that could sell you goods at a cheap price. Whoa. And you could sell it on eBay, right? But you know, at the end of the day, they weren't really that helpful because these wholesalers, you would normally have to buy in bulk, and right, you know, right. a lot of these companies did not want to deal with individuals. But it got me interested in e-commerce, and you know, this was again early days, so you know, retail arbitrage was something that was very, very doable back in the day, where you could maybe purchase something offline and then sell it like directly on eBay with virtually no competition, and people from all over the US could buy your product, right? So I remember the first item I sold was a scanner. A scanner, an Epson scanner. And you know, whatever, like as a young, you know, early 20s, you know, earning an extra $20 on a scanner was amazing. And I just found that so fascinating that I got addicted and I got hooked. Wow. And I ended up kind of turning that into a real business, where I became a power seller, and eventually kind of, you know, kind of getting into all these different things. I'm not really going to get into everything I sold. It's too many things. But eventually what I landed on was, you know, kind of being, I guess, a one of the larger importers of exotic wood.
Whoa.
And that's also kind of one of the reasons why I moved back to the Philippines.
Okay.
Because the exotic wood was coming from the Philippines, and there was a lot of people in the US that were building like things with this exotic wood, and that's kind of what I eventually kind of landed on as a permanent kind of e-commerce business on eBay.
Yeah. No, but I want to understand, because again, having a knack or an eye, because again, before when you were younger, you're looking for the Michael Jordan card, right? You have to have an eye for demand.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just random demand. It's demand that's contrarian, so that, you know, it's not a red ocean. And if you see that, it's easy to dominate. And that's a key to startup success. Because if you're going to be competing where, yeah, I'm going to compete in e-commerce and be the next Lazada, right? Or Shopee, and go head-to-head with them like that, you're going to have a hard time. But here, exotic wood coming from the Philippines, that's very specific. I'm pretty sure there's not a lot of competition. How did you even see that demand come through? And then at the end of the day, you're just going to have to worry about filling that supply.
Yeah, I mean, I think this was, I guess, happened by, you know, accident maybe, right? But I think it you know, when I boil it down, it's really, you know, my willingness, right? You know, I think you have to have a willingness to go deep and understand what your customers really, really want and what they find valuable about the product that you're selling or offering, right? And to kind of give you a flavor. And, you know, this is going to be something that I applied in the physical world or physical products, but it can apply across the board, right? And so, you know, in the beginning of eBay, I was just whatever. I was just so fascinated by the whole concept of e-commerce that I was just buying, selling anything, right?
Right.
But then what I ended up landing on, I don't even remember how I landed on this, but I ended up landing on... billiard sticks, right?
Ooh.
And I don't play pool or anything. I mean, sure, you know, every now and then, but I was never really interested in it. But I had a supplier of you know, billiard sticks in the Philippines, and he was sending it over to me in the US. And what I realized that there was like a big discrepancy of price between, you know, or selling price between some of these billiard sticks. And I didn't understand why, you know, some were selling at $300, some would sell for $50. And so then I called some of my buyers and I asked, like, why did you pay so much more for this one? Right. And he goes, you know what? It's that wood that you put in your billiard stick. This really nicely grained wood. And I love that. And it makes you know, everyone compliments me on my billiard sticks whenever I bring this one around. And so that kind of led me to go deeper into like, okay, this is what customers are looking for, and this is what customers are willing to pay extra for. So I went down this kind of rabbit hole of trying to find, you know, I ended up going to the Philippines, you know, this is 2004, going back to the Philippines 2004, and trying to find this wood. And so it led
it
me
sounded like Indiana Jones.
Yeah, it was crazy. You know, I literally was driving around like looking for any type of vendor that was selling wood and showing them a picture. Do you know what this is? And eventually I found my way to somewhere in Cavite, you know, and this guy knew exactly what I was talking about. He brought me to his back room and said, I think this is what you're looking for. And yeah, that's how I found it. Yeah.
And you stuck around, right? So ever since then, you're now in the Philippines. But how did you get into tech? Because again, I'll just breeze through this.
Yeah.
One thing that stuck out, 2011 is technically, you know, you did some group buying, but did that come before Send, or Send was the first thing that you did? Oh, how did you get into tech, and how was the experience building all of that tech in the early 2000s or late 2000s in the Philippines, where, oh my God, it's nothing compared to what we have now?
Yeah. I mean, Send was definitely the first, right? And and it was, you know, I thought of Send because of my experience directly, my direct experience with eBay, right? In the US and in the Philippines, right? Where it's like, in the US, when I was selling all these things, I would literally have to go to the post office, line up and ship my part. You know, I would waste like 2 hours of my day just to ship the stuff that I sold, right? And so same thing in the Philippines, I would have to go to the post office. And, you know, the experience of shipping a parcel in the US versus the Philippines is different, right? Like, it, you know, going to the post office is not a great experience. You know, it's hot. There's manual, like a manual forms. You can't bring any forms home. You have to do everything there. No one really knew what e-commerce was. They're like, why are you sending all these parcels? Like, are you, this seems shady. You know, like it was all these challenges. So
what year was this? Just for red context, just to see how far we've come.
Okay. Well, this is like, yeah, this is like 2004.
Oh God.
You know, like
almost
really
20 years ago.
Yeah. Wow. I feel so old, but yeah. almost 20 years ago. But, you know, to be honest, I think that, you know, there's still a lot of the same issues that we're facing now, 20 years later, but I think it's getting better for sure, 100% better.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, it was that kind of experience of, you know, having such a hard time shipping, and it really prevented me from focusing on my business, right? Like I could, right. If I would have to spend 3-4 hours of my day just shipping something, you know, that's 3 to 4 hours of time that I could not spend on my business. And I knew that like e-commerce would never grow in the Philippines if entrepreneurs and people who wanted to get into e-commerce had to do that. It would just be a blocker, and it would prevent people from going online. So yep. I knew that I had to build something that would make it easier, more affordable for people to kind of not have to worry about that shipping part. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of what happened there.
And again, you bootstrapped this. I just want to understand how difficult it was to build a product. Because typically in the Philippines, I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. We're a service country by default. We're a service-driven economy, service-driven people, right? That also plays into our core strengths. But you built a product, right? Of course, there's some semblances of services in between, but it is a product, has a name. There's a customer interface. But building a product back then, early 2000s, was unheard of, right? Here, I just want to understand, how did you build the MVP, the core, and how difficult was it to get off the ground?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question, and I'll have to try to, you know, I can't believe it's been almost 20 years, but yeah, I'll have to
try
to
the carbon date you like that.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely, you know, definitely a different time, right? I mean, I think the tools that that are available now were not available back then, and you had to be creative. You know, you had to, you know, definitely get your hands super dirty. And I remember, you know, I guess, you know, we started to build the actual product maybe, you know, maybe around 2008, 2009. You know, maybe for the first 3-4 years, we were focused a little more on helping like Filipino entrepreneurs that were selling abroad, you know, selling to the US market. So there was really no product to be built yet. And I was waiting for when, you know, internet penetration started to increase a little more. So this is like 2008, 2009, when like, I think Sulit was kind yep. of kind of coming up. You know, eBay came into the Philippines, so people started to start to trade locally.
Yep. C2C.
Yeah. And so I remember, you know, maybe the first MVP was, you know, us just creating this really simple web page that, you know, people had to, you know, kind of every time fill out their address. And we didn't have any type of registration yet, right? So it was just filling out wow. your address every single time. And then once you submitted that form, that would just go to like some person who would be writing addresses on a whiteboard and you know, trying to make it feel like it was a seamless experience. But
right,
you know, that's what you got to do in the beginning is really kind of, you know, do things in the background.
Wizard of Oz style.
Wizard of Oz, you know, style, for sure.
Right. But okay, how did you then grow this? So you got this, and this is where the very semblance of startups, it wasn't even called startups back then. The term startup in the Philippines was pretty much used en masse around 2012. Back then, e-commerce was like, yeah, people didn't even know what to call that. What were your early struggles, and how did you build early traction for Send?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, to a certain extent, we were lucky that we were super early movers in that, you know, we essentially kind of were able to grow with the market. You know, the market was very small when we started. So, you know, we could start off with maybe a couple riders that were picking up and delivering parcels. And as e-commerce grew, we would just kind of slowly grow with the market. So we were lucky in that way. But to really, you know, get the word out there that Send was cool and Send was, you know, something that could be helpful, you know, and this is very applicable to this day. Right. Is that we went super guerrilla marketing style where, you know, I would be going into, you know, at the time, these were, I don't know, forums and chat groups online. Yep. I don't even know what platforms those were on back then. and really kind of saying, hey, you know, Send is this cool, you know, internet-based courier company where you can help you save money and we'll go to your house. You don't have to spend any time going to the post office anymore. You know, check us out. And it just kind of started to snowball from there where people started to share it and it kind of, you know, had some sort of viral effect. And we were able to grow and gain traction that way in the early days.
That's amazing. All right. Now, before we take our last break, because this is going to be a lot of what I'm going to be asking you, especially for Send. Mm-hmm. I want to understand the bootstrap part. Because, mm-hmm. again, VC or venture funding did not exist or was not wildly discussed probably around 2012. Or even in 2012, there weren't even any decent checks or any logical check that was going around. People were buying for it, but it's not the ones that you see. And if there were people being funded at that point prior to that, this was few and far between. So your only option is to really get profitable. And it's hard if you're trying to grow for massive growth. But how did you do that for Send?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think there's two parts to that, right? And here's another kind of inside scoop. You know, I would say definitely, yes, we had to kind of think creatively and think hard about how can we be profitable from day one? Yes. And how can we sustain this business, right? But, you know, going back to even a little before that, right? I mean, like you said, right? VCs and venture capital was not a thing until maybe 2012 at the earliest or something around that time, right?
Right.
So, you know, I can tell you that the early days of Send was built on maxing out my credit cards. And, ooh. You know, I mean, that was, I, you know, that caused me to have bad credit for a while. But, you know, again, you have to do what it takes, you know, you gotta, if you believe in what you're doing and that you will eventually be able to kind of make that good, yep. you might have to make some sacrifices at the beginning. That's what I had to do. But yeah, I mean, like, to, you know, to answer the, it in the, you know, the other kind of solution, is really to kind of think of like, how can we be profitable from day one? Okay. And so, you know, I knew that, you know, I was definitely passionate about helping entrepreneurs and helping, you know, the Filipino e-commerce industry grow. But what can I do to kind of sustain that side of the business? And so, and this goes back to kind of what I was doing on eBay was, which was, you know, shipping things from the Philippines back to the US. And because of that, I was able to develop like relationships with a lot of these international courier companies, right? So I was able to get really great discounts.
Nice.
So one part of our business of Send was really serving any type of company, whether they're e-commerce or not, for their international shipping needs. So international shipping is very lucrative and profitable, very high margins. So we were like helping manpower agencies, law firms send documents abroad, right? So we were sustaining and kind of, you know, supporting, you know, the other side of the Send business, which was e-commerce with this, I guess you could say B2B, yep. you know, business. So, and that's applicable to this day, right? I mean, I think there's a lot of companies that have to kind of do that, you know, have like this one cash cow that would support maybe a larger vision. And that's kind of what correct. We had to do.
And if you're, again, especially for you're a local startup, right? A lot of times, you know, a lot of VCs, especially in this climate, nobody wants to write a check. Mm-hmm. The real ones that will survive from idea, from the big ass, whatever thing that you want to tell the world, is the ones that will actually find a way to find a cash cow. You know, and sometimes you got to do things that you don't want to do, you know, because beggars can't be choosers in this market. You know, you got to find where you can make money and get to profitability as fast. Because when you get profitable, then you will have leverage on when you need to fundraise and how you can operate your business. You're not under pressure to survive.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think, you know, I think. I think that, you know, if you're passionate enough about what you're doing and you're in love with whatever problem you're trying to solve, yep. you know, kind of doing whatever it takes comes naturally.
Yes.
So I think that's kind of one of the most important things, and is really truly being passionate about what you're doing. And I know that might sound cliche, but it really, you know, that really gets a lot of entrepreneurs through the difficult and tough times.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's how you will then know how gritty and how much you'd far, how far you'd go for your business. All right. Now let's take our first break. And when we come back, let's now talk about how you then grew Send all the way to your next few things that led to AHE. Well, let's talk about that more after the break.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Hey guys, I have a very, very exciting opportunity I want to share with you guys. If you're a B2B startup founder, listen up. Your ticket to growth is here. Introducing Impact 24, the Philippines' largest B2B SaaS challenge. Calling all startups in their pre-launch, pre-seed, or seed stages, this is your chance to accelerate your growth. Submit your pitch to Impact 24 and get ready for a 10-week intensive program to elevate your solution. What's in it for you? How about up to 500,000 pesos in MVP project support, exclusive credits from industry partners, personalized mentoring, and a shot to pitch at SaaSCon PH, the country's biggest SaaS conference this April. But yo, you gotta hurry up because submissions close on January 26, 2024 already. Don't miss out on this opportunity to take your startup to new heights. Apply now at saaschallenge.ph. That's saaschallenge.ph. And good luck, and I'll see you guys in Impact 24. And we're back in the break. We are still with Bjorn Pardo again of AHG Lab, who then are telling us about his early days in Send. But again, the early days does not even illustrate how amazing his journey is with Send, at least, because he did 16 years and 1 month doing this, right? To be very specific. But I wanna delve into this because there's a massive evolution that happened in Send. Right? Was it the same product through and through, or did you like evolve? And if you did, what were the products or product that it ended up doing?
Yeah, I mean, we're because we had to bootstrap, because we had to be profitable from day one, we had to have different business units. You know, as I mentioned earlier, right? Like we had this international shipping business unit, which was focused on a whole different market. Yeah. And, you know, then we had the kind of local e-commerce logistics business unit, which was focused on entrepreneurs and e-commerce and all that. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, kind of along the way, you know, we definitely had to build our own tech. There was no off-the-shelf software at the time. Wow. We had to build everything from scratch. So we had, you know, all of this technology that was custom built, and that was built for a local courier company, so that eventually became a business on its own. Okay. And then you know, maybe another one was, you know, as we, you know, because I've always been passionate about, you know, helping entrepreneurs, because I was a, you know, e-commerce entrepreneur myself, and so I knew the issues and problems that you know, these entrepreneurs were going through. And so I always was looking for, you know, what other services can we offer to make, you know, their lives easier. And so, you know, we created a service at the time, which eventually was spun off, mm-hmm. that helped, you know, these same entrepreneurs, okay. Source products from the US and resell it locally. Nice. Kind of similar to a galleon in a way, right?
Got it. But not drop shipping.
Not drop shipping. But then, yeah, another business that was eventually acquired, kind of in between all of this, is a company called OKOK Group Buying. Group Buying was very, Group Buying was very popular in the 2011, 2012, 2013.
I was part of the game. I was working for Groupon in 2011.
Okay, there you go.
And that was so cutthroat.
Yeah.
It was a race to the bottom in terms of who's gonna, you know, subsidize all these discounts.
Yeah, right? Yeah, definitely. I mean, but again, with us, we were thinking of it from the vantage point of entrepreneurs, right? And yes. And so we were doing something a little different. We were saying, okay, we'll create a group buying site that would allow our existing entrepreneur e-commerce seller base sell their excess inventory, right? And so, you know, it was a group buying site that was focused on entrepreneurs and helping them liquidate their excess inventory. So that was eventually acquired by... which eventually became kind of another company that I co-founded in QuadX. So we had to build all these different, like we, you know, it you know, Send evolved into all these different kind of separate business units at mm-hmm. the end of the day. Yeah.
Right. So this is the interesting thing that I really wanted to be. So basically it sprung off to 2 to 3 startups on its own. And if you look at how VCs always like, and again, or how modern startup education is being taught, they said focus on one thing and do that one thing right. But you did the opposite. You had to, again, bootstrap, find a way to do it and spin out multiple businesses and still get them all acquired, right? The question is, how do you even get that done in terms of, you know, the manpower and the trajectory, because it's very few founders have the ability to even focus on one, yet alone you did multiple and still thrived in each. How were you able to get that done?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm definitely a big supporter of focus, right? But then focus is subjective. And if you look at what I was doing at the time, I would argue that I was focused, right? Maybe with the exception of maybe the other kind of international shipping business, which was kind of necessary for us to survive, right? That was a necessity.
Kept you guys afloat.
Yeah.
Right.
But everything else, right? I would argue that we were focused. We were focused on what can we do to help the e-commerce entrepreneur, right? Mm-hmm. And so we were focused, laser focused on that. And if that was shipping, if that was importing, if that was helping them liquidate their excess inventory, they're all connected in that we're trying to help the e-commerce entrepreneur, right? So there is this concept called, you know, it was coined by the founder of his name is Parker Conrad, right? I forgot.
Conrad.
Yeah. So he has this concept of what he calls a compound startup. Right.
Compound startup. I've never heard. What is a compound startup?
Well, okay, I'm going to butcher this, but basically, you know, a compound startup is you are focused on something, right? Not necessarily a specific kind of feature, but you're focused on maybe a target market, a customer.
Right.
And what other kind of services or benefits or features can you build for this customer that are tightly integrated, that can help them with whatever they need to achieve in a more end-to-end way, right? So that's what we were doing, right? Is we were saying, okay, we'll help you with the shipping, but then we'll help you with the importing of products, right? And then that's integrated, tightly integrated into kind of shipping that out to your local customers. And anything that is not sold, you can kind of list on our OKOK, you know, group buying website, right? So it's you know, so I feel like that, yeah, focus on something, but think about kind of the compound startup concept a little more.
And compound, it means technically still narrowed down in a specific target market. So I now understand how that works, because technically that's what we did also in Podcast Network Asia. Mm-hmm. So we started out when 2019 started as basically a venture builder, but for podcasts, right? Mm-hmm. So we took our bets with multiple podcasts and whatnot. Our business model, our only business model back then, is we get these guys traction. So eventually they'll become a Spotify exclusive. They're going to get licensed out. Nice money. Or if they get super traction, they're going to get advertisements. And whatever they make, we do a rev share. They get the lion's share. The problem with that model is that advertising in podcasts isn't mainstream yet. So the type of budgets we were getting were not enough to keep us afloat. And if we stayed that route, we would have been dead by now. So in the essence of Compound Start, I didn't even know that that's what we were doing. We realized our superpower, because we went from zero to 230 podcasts in 2 years. It became the biggest podcast network in Southeast Asia. And we the real superpower that we realized was that, shit, nobody can produce podcasts at this scale anywhere. And you said arbitrage. Yes, arbitrage is always going to be cheaper to produce shows, English, world-class quality, from here in the Philippines.
Yeah, wow.
So we then productized, we sassed out our production process.
Amazing.
And sort of like bootstrap this. We started this in February. Now we're almost breaking even. We're on track to be cash flow positive. I had a 50-man team.
Wow.
It was fucking crazy. It was scary. There were a lot of close calls this year, right? But we got to this point where, holy shit, we didn't have to let people go, because they're our biggest asset also, right? A lot of problems. And I'll share this somewhere down the road, but I'm just giving you a glimpse. But as a compound startup, you still narrow down into the same customer or the same, you know, vertical, mm-hmm. but find other ways to make money and productize them. And without doing it, we called it Pod Machine. That's mm-hmm. the sponsor of this podcast all the time. Without that, we would have been dead by now, because then we realized that, holy shit, we're not just Southeast Asian. The same thing that we're doing applies to the US. So our biggest clientele are podcast networks in the US who needs help with their production, because again, arbitrage is in our favor. Nice. There you go. We have a little bit of a sand in our blood.
Oh, nice, nice.
Right. So walk me through. So after all these products, what was the end? Because again, you have all these things. What was the end of the journey for Send?
Yeah, I mean, I think when I first started Send, it was really all about how could we help e-commerce entrepreneurs conveniently and affordably ship their parcels so they could grow their business and at the end of the day, really try to grow the e-commerce industry.
Yeah.
And so this was around like maybe 20, maybe from 2016 to 18, or maybe even earlier, maybe 2015 to 2018. You know, e-commerce was definitely growing. You know, I think Lazada, Shopee were already here at that time, Zalora, all those companies. Yep. There was a lot of VC attention, or, you know, it was gaining some VC attention. So we had a lot of acquisition offers. To be honest, when I first got into this, into entrepreneurship, I didn't know what venture capital was. I didn't know that there was an opportunity to exit. Like, I just wanted to build a company. So I was learning about kind of my exit opportunities and investment opportunities kind of on the fly.
Yeah.
And so it was very foreign to me at the time. And I just knew I wanted to continue to build this. And so, you know, 2015, you know, for the, you know, first couple of years when I was getting a bunch of acquisition offers, I wasn't seriously entertaining them. Mm. You know, maybe looking back in hindsight, it's like, wow, maybe, you know, I could have probably, exited at a higher valuation. But, you know, I think, you know, everything happens. I don't know. Maybe everything happens for a reason, but I think you have to kind of learn from every experience that you go through and turn it into a positive. But, you know, I think in 2018, I guess I can sum this up with a here I'm going to butcher another thing. You know, this is a Steve Jobs quote. I love quotes, and so there's this one Steve Jobs quote that I remember where he was saying, you know, if you wake up too many days in a row and you're not looking forward to what you're going to be doing on that day, you got to change something, right? So this is 2018. We had already achieved, you know, what we set out to achieve in helping entrepreneurs. There are already a bunch of, you know, all of the incumbents that we disrupted were already focusing on the same market that we were focusing on. Everyone's focusing on SMEs. Everyone's, you know, there's all these foreign, you know, e-commerce logistics companies in the country already kind of serving this growing market. Right. And you know, not to say that we were being eaten alive or anything like that. Like, we were still thriving. Like, we were still top of mind when it came to,
nice,
you know, shipping a parcel for an e-commerce business. Like, we were growing organically at a crazy rate. We spent zero money on marketing. We benefited from our first mover advantage to the very end. And, you know, we didn't have to spend anything. Like, we were organically growing every day. And, but, you know, I knew that, you know, there were so many more problems that entrepreneurs had that I needed to maybe put a little bit more focus on. Right. And we'd already, you know, logistics was already, you know, there's still a lot of things that need to be done, but it was mature enough where, the companies that were serving, the market was already great. So in 2018, you know, not a traditional kind of exit, but, you know, because we built so many different kind of business units, we were able to kind of treat them individually and exit each one of these companies individually from the international business to kind of, you know, the tech that we built and we ended up kind of, you know, licensing a lot of, you know, our software to companies that are still operating to this day, you know, the next day logistics business to a different company. And then the company that helps entrepreneurs import from the US and resell locally, that was officially spun off and that's still existing to this day. It's called Genio. And so that's kind of growing organically. So that was, you know, kind of like the untraditional, non-traditional kind of exit. But it, you know, we were able to maximize, you know, the value because we had so many different business units.
Right. And that's still way better than what I experienced with my first startup, which is completely dying and crashing and burning. Right. So at least you were able to, you know, get ROI at some sort of fashion for each. But here's what I wanted to ask, is there's not a lot of people who know how to answer this that have lived this life. After all of these acquisitions, what did it feel? Because when I got acquired in Chatbot BH, I still had to run it, but there was a sort of itch, and I didn't for a few months before I started podcasting. The big question in my mind was, what now? What was that like for you, and what was the next step?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it was a bit, I guess a little bittersweet, right? I mean, I was doing it, like you said, for 16 years and a month.
Yeah.
So it was my identity. It was who I was. It was in my, correct, you know, it was part of my DNA already. So it was definitely like, it did feel a little foreign, right? That, okay, yeah, what next? What am I going to do? All I knew was I wanted to, that passion for helping entrepreneurs. And if I could sum it up, right? I mean, I think what my passion really is kind of trying to level the playing field for entrepreneurs and create something that'll give them access to preferential pricing, benefits, services that would be normally reserved for larger companies, right? So,
nice.
And so, you know, when you think about it that way, there's so many other things that you can do. And so at the time, I wanted to focus more on Genio. That was kind of like, okay, this is my next thing. I'm going to help. I'm going to scale this and grow this. But then, you know, kind of coincidentally, I stumbled upon this company called UBX. And I had a friend that worked in Union Bank. And, you know, I was telling him about my idea, Genio. And he said, you know what? you know, Union Bank is going to start this kind of venture builder called UBX, and they're going to be focusing on SMEs, and they want to build tech that'll help SMEs and entrepreneurs. And I thought, and he said, you should talk to the guys over at UBX. I'll introduce you. And long story short, right? I mean, pure coincidence and serendipity. You know, I felt like, okay, this is exactly what I want to do. And I feel like that with the platform of Union Bank and UBX, that I could make a larger impact. And so for, about 2.5 years, I was, leading commerce and payments at UBX and built, a payments aggregator and an e-commerce platform, similar to like a Shopify over there. So, nice. Yeah, that's...
Yep, I've had the chance to talk to John Jay here on the show before, talked to the some of the guys as well there. But I want to understand, so this is really coming from experience. How different is it being an EIR or being someone, an entrepreneur within a venture builder arm? Because now that's what you're doing with AHG. You are the guy helping venture or EIRs create businesses off of the ground. But for you... as that guy during that time, how different was it when you were just doing, your own show without the support that you needed? I guess discuss the pros and cons working in a venture builder per se.
Yeah, I mean, kind of working in a venture builder as the kind of venture builder or, maybe kind of EIR, to speak, it allows you to focus like almost solely on the product. I mean, I love building things. I love building things. So that was a super plus for me, where I didn't have to worry about like registering a company, hiring, finding, a team of people, team of developers, marketing.
Not worry about payroll.
Yeah, payroll. Like all these kind of all these things that you would normally have to kind of be hands-on on with your own company. So that was definitely a pro for me. Like I love building. So I was able to get my hands dirty with product development, working with developers, working with designers. I love that. And, understanding the customer, talking to customers. I love that. So that was a huge plus. It definitely allowed, me to kind of build, we launched our MVP of Bux, which was the payments aggregator in like three sprints, six
what?
Weeks, maybe.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah. So it was, if you are, if you can focus, you can build fast, right? So we were able to do that. We scaled that up to 100,000 users. We were helping a bunch of entrepreneurs, accept payments. Mm. So that was a huge plus, right? And, I wouldn't say really like a con, but something that's different, right? Is that, you do get, you have to think about the bigger picture of the organization, right? And so
there's an agenda that you have to like tick off.
Yeah. I mean, I totally believe in the agenda, right? And I get it. And then but it's something different. It's another kind of thing you have to think about, right? Is like, okay, how can what you're building kind of integrate back into maybe the other ventures of UBX? How can it integrate back into the mother company? Yep. So those are additional things that you have to think about. Not necessarily a con, but something different.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Now I'll just fast forward a little bit, because after UBX, you did Home Credit and a couple more stints. But now fast forward to AHG Lab with my man, Mark Wieman, our investor from Foxmont, also our angel. But how did that journey, because again, now it comes full circle. Mm-hmm. You come from being an entrepreneur all on your own. You work under a venture builder, and now you built a venture builder. But walk me through first, because AHG's been around, right? How did you bump into this opportunity, and how did you then become the guy creating the lab?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like you said, right? I mean, I think I've had like the full 360 experience, and coming from being a serial entrepreneur, I knew like I'm always going to be pulled into into ventures, into opportunities that are going to be more entrepreneurial than others, and that are more maybe independent than others. So, again, my kind of underlying passion is helping entrepreneurs. Another kind of coincidence, right? Or serendipitous moment in that, you know, I know, you know, our common friend Christian, you know, is very, you know, well connected in the tech community.
And he is the father of Startup PH. Let's just him that.
Definitely.
Startup PH,
definitely.
The group, not the teleserye that you see in GMA. he's the one who created that. So again, credit where credit is due.
Definitely. So, you know, through Chris, I met, you know, a very talented founder in Carlos Silva, which...
Shout out Carlos Silva, by the way. If you see my background, this is in WeRemote.
Yeah.
Definitely. This is the studio in WeRemote. We built Podcast Network Asia in WeRemote MetroWalk until they start deciding to tear it down in a few years. But while we're up, before they turn it into a subway station, we're kicking it there. So Carlo, shout out. Amazing entrepreneur. Again, one day you'll have it here. It's overdue, my man. If you're listening to this, it's your turn next.
Definitely. Shout out to Carlo. And I was talking to Carlo about an opportunity with WeRemote, and we met at the AHG office. Mark was there, and you know, I learned a little bit about kind of what they were doing, and I thought this is perfect, right? I mean, helping entrepreneurs, helping this next generation of entrepreneurs, you know, what the future of tech would be in the Philippines. And I knew that this was something that I could help with. Here I am.
All right. Now let's take our last break. And when we come back, we will then talk about what they're building and the type of startups that will be springing out under the AHG Lab umbrella. Well, let's talk about that more after the break. Hey Hustlers, it's time to talk business once again, and we're excited to share a bit more info about our sponsor, Sprout Solutions. And again, just like what I said at the start of the episode, you should check out Sprout's Payroll Starter as you grow your own startup. Because this bundle that they have is literally what you need to take your startup to the next level as you grow your employees. And this bundle is your key to freedom, including payroll outsourcing to experts, a subscription to timekeeping and attendance software, and government compliance services. Sprout's Payroll Starter has you covered for payroll, BIR, SSS, and taxes. All the stuff that no founder loves to do. So let Sprout handle the busy work and say goodbye to lines and tax payment stress. All this for as low as 5,000 pesos. Again, that's just 5,000 pesos all in for your payroll and HR needs. So visit sprout.ph payroll-starter-monthly-5k, or again, just click the link in the description box of this episode to elevate your business management game. And again, big thank you to Sprout Solutions, liberating your time for what truly matters. Hey Hustlers, wish there was an easy way to open a bank account and grow your money without the hassle of lengthy application process and income documents? Well, I got good news, because today's sponsor, Uno Digital Bank, is here to help you achieve your financial goals. You can easily open an account with the Uno app in just 5 minutes and one valid ID. And as one of the 6 digital banks licensed by the Banco Central ng Pilipinas, the company is committed to providing customers with simpler, better, and more accessible banking. Last year, Uno Bank was recognized by the Asia Banking and Finance Awards and bagged the title Open Banking Initiative of the Year due to the success of its partnership with GCash, one of the Philippines' leading mobile wallet platforms. And with the Uno mobile app, you can access an hashtag Uno Ready Savings account and enjoy daily interest crediting. With their hashtag Uno Earn or hashtag Uno Boost Time Deposit accounts, you can enjoy a high interest rate of up to 6.5% per annum. Enjoy monthly payouts with hashtag Uno Earn and flexible tenors with hashtag Uno Boost. Other app features include pay bills, the Uno Virtual Debit MasterCard, life insurance, scan and pay with QRPH, and phones. And the one thing that I really love about Uno Digital Bank is they're open to collaborate with a lot of Filipino startups. I've had a chance to see the partnerships that they've had lined up with the startups that they have, and it's truly exciting to see how a digital bank like Uno can enable startups to unlock the power of fintech through digital banking. So if you're ready to elevate your banking experience, download the Uno mobile app today from the Google Play Store or App Store. Or if you want to collaborate with them, I'll be happy to give you an intro. Just shoot us an email at hello@huffleshare.com. Hey Hustlers, I hope you're having a great 2024 so far. As you know, a lot of startups had a very challenging 2023, and hopefully things are going to do better this year for a lot of us. Not just because it's the year of the dragon, but also because our sponsor, Dragon Pay, is here to help your startups process payments in the most efficient way. Established in 2010, Dragon Pay empowers businesses of all sizes to accept and disperse payments through secure and convenient channels, giving your customers the flexibility to choose the payment method that suits them best. With over 85 partner channels, 35,000 partner branches nationwide, including QRPH, e-wallets, crypto, buy now, pay later, and many more. They also process an astonishing 15 million transactions processed globally each month. Dragon Pay is your trusted choice for online payments. And here's something to show you how legit Dragon Pay is. Dragon Pay was named FinTech of the Year at last year's Philippine FinTech Festival in 2023. So let's make 2024 extra prosperous for you and your startup in this year of the dragon. For more details, head on over to dragonpay.ph. That's dragonpay.ph. Trust the pioneer. Trust Dragon Pay. And we're back to break. We are still with Bjorn Pardo, now told us again the 360 journey from being an entrepreneur, working under a venture builder, and now having a venture builder himself. Again, shout out to CB, father of Startup PH, and Carlos Silva of WeRemote. But I now want to understand, so when you met them, what was the goal? Because you said it was perfect. What was the vision that you saw that you can buy into, that you know, the stars seemingly aligned?
Yeah, I mean, kind of being, you know, kind of building my own startup, I knew the challenges firsthand, right? Like yeah. I said, right? It's like hiring a team, finding developers that'll build your product for you, you know, marketing strategy, building financial models, operations, all these things, right? And I, to a certain extent, you know, those things, you know, slowed me down. And I couldn't focus 100% of my time on, you know, some of the other things where, that would help grow and benefit my business. Right. Yeah. So, you know, when they were talking about how they were doing things differently, in that, okay, they would provide all of these basic services to the founder and entrepreneur, and also provide like true hands-on support from experienced entrepreneurs, operators. I thought that was a perfect fit, right? Because like when you look at other kind of maybe venture builders or you know, kind of maybe incubator programs, you know, a lot of times it's very kind of high level. They'll give you some advice and like yeah. support and, you know, mentorship, right? But nothing really that gets that where everyone kind of gets their hands dirty. And this is something that's different over at HG, is where, you know, we have all of those basic kind of services in the marketing department, tech, all that. But then at the same time, we have like a very diverse team of entrepreneurs, operators, you know, like you said, Mark, very experienced in real estate and BPO and just kind of growing companies, you know, myself, e-commerce, fintech, and we have a couple people from Europe that have been involved in venture builders, and just like a super diverse team of people that are going to get their hands dirty and help entrepreneurs build nice. Ventures. Yeah.
No, but what type of ventures? Because typically when there are venture builders, either they're completely agnostic or they're vertical focused. In AHG Lab, again, AHG stands for Alternative Housing Group. What are the verticals, or what type of founder or venture builders or founders are you looking for to build with?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, our foundation was built on our experience from two of our other co-founders in in the real estate space, like Mark being one of them, another one being Marcel. So they're leaders in, you know, co-living and the dormitory space, right? So they built two of the largest, My Town being one, two of the largest co-living and dormitory operations in the Philippines. So, you know, like inherently, we knew firsthand the pains of, you know, running these types of properties, right? So our first layer of ventures were focused on prop tech, right? Mm. You know, one being, you know, called Colo, which is a property management system that is really built for, you know, these types of properties. And there's nothing, you know, like when you look at what's available out there, there's like property management systems that are built for, you know, hotels and large condominiums, but nothing really built for, you know, bed spacing or dormitories, right? So we, you know, the first layer of our ventures were solving problems that, you know, we knew as AHG that were problems. But once we started to kind of, you know, look deeper into, you know, the communities around these properties and the tenants and the guests, we realized that, you know, there's so much more opportunity, right? The opportunity is much bigger than prop tech, and we call it prop tech plus. Mm-hmm. And that really means, you know, what else can we do within these communities that surround these properties that we have, that we operate and have access to? How can we make their lives and the community's lives easier and give them access, again, access to services and products that would be normally maybe reserved for people in the CBDs? Yeah.
And that's amazing. But at the end of the day, the success of these potential startups revolves on the type of founders you get. Mm-hmm. So I've had a lot of venture builders here come in through the podcast, and I've contributed significant enough type of founders to apply. Mm-hmm. or join. But what type of founders and what type of expertise are you looking for? In AHG?
Yeah, I mean, I think something a little different with us, right, is like maybe with some other venture builders, they're looking for, you know, maybe people with more experience that can, you know, maybe grow a venture kind of independently by themselves. And that's great. I think that's a great profile to have, right? But mm-hmm. I think, you know, we're trying to kind of be more inclusive, you know, in that we're HG and the individuals, like the people like me and the other people kind of at the venture builder level that we have, can help augment an entrepreneur with, you know, some of the experience that we've gone through and help them kind of get through these things, you know, with them, where mm-hmm. And provide them with, you know, all of the support that they need for them to be able to focus. So when we look for entrepreneurs and founders, we're really looking for people more than anything who are, you know, close to the problem that they're trying to solve. Ideally, you know, you're solving your own problem. I think some of the best founders are solving their own problems.
Scratch your itch.
Yeah, definitely. You know, those people who are super passionate and people who are willing to get their hands dirty, and who are open to the support that we're willing to give. So I think that's what makes us a little different, in that we're open to people with a little less experience where we can help augment them. Mm. And, you know, we're really looking for passionate founders more than anything.
That's amazing. But once they're there, okay, what do they expect in terms of support? You said, again, just being surrounded by veterans or people who have been there and done that is a plus. But what are the other perks that they can technically jump on? Because a lot of the listeners of Hustle Share also are those people who are on the cusp or on the precipice of becoming an entrepreneur. And I always said it before that if I was like starting out and I just want to get my feet wet, but I'm scared of risking it all, whatever I had left or I have accumulated, doing a venture builder approach or joining a venture builder is the easiest way in. Because you get to learn startup skills, startup pressure, and startup everything. But it's not just all you, right? Unless you want to crash and burn like we did, right? But again, that's a whole other thing. But this is the healthy middle somewhere in between. But you know, what are the perks that they're going to get if they join your venture builder in AHG Lab?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I truly believe, and I think we truly believe at AHG that, you know, the best way to build ventures, the next generation of like successful tech ventures in the Philippines is the venture builder model. I think that, you know, when you look at the evolution of, you know, digitalization in the Philippines, it has, you know, the pandemic has accelerated the country and, yep, and fast forwarded the country into a digital present, right? Where everyone is accepting digital payments now. Everyone's buying online now. When, you know, just the, you know, 2 years ago, it was not the case, right? So now you have this, you have the infrastructure there. And so now there's this new influx of entrepreneurs that are seeing all of these opportunities because of the infrastructure that's already there. Mm-hmm. But they don't necessarily have the experience, the expertise, maybe even the confidence to start a company on their own. So like you said, I think this is the, really the an alternative. And for us, we believe it's the best way to build a venture. So you can expect us to, you know, all you really need, right, is you need to be passionate about and you know, what you're building. You know, ideally a deck, that would be great. You know, you can kind of mm-hmm. show us kind of what your venture's all about, right? And you know, we move quickly if there is a fit, if we feel that the problem is worth solving, there's a huge opportunity, we can bring you on board in the next day, really, literally what? The next day.
That's crazy.
And yeah, so we'll, you know, like what you can expect from us is like, you know, from day one, you know, we'll help you think about what your MVP should be. We'll help you build your MVP. Right. We'll help you build a team if you need a you know, more members to your team. Yeah. And then, you know, once we get to a point where we can help you launch a product, then we can help you fundraise. Right. We can help connect you to different, you know, seed stage VCs and investors, right, angel investors, and just continue to provide you with the support that you need. And eventually hoping that you can become a little more independent, right? Where you don't have to rely on HG your whole life, right? It's like we want to get to the point where we can help you in the beginning, you know, jumpstart your venture, guide you through some of the things that you need help with, and then become independent as you are able to fundraise on your own.
That is amazing. Again, thank you very much, Bjorn, for sharing the amazing things that you guys are building. But again, we are not going to end this episode and leave all these people hanging on how to join. If they are now sold or they're curious on how to join AHG Lab, how do they reach out to you and where do they do that?
Yeah, so go to our website, ahglab.com. Check us out. Check out all the different ventures that we have and what we offer, and send us an email. I mean, we're always looking for entrepreneurs. We're always looking for passionate people that are passionate and you know, looking to solve big problems and want to make an mm-hmm. impact on the digital future of the Philippines. Yeah, reach out to us. We're hungry for entrepreneurs.
There you go. And if you want to work in the middle of Sinigang Valley, that's where they work as well, in the heart of all the startup activity in the Philippines. Again, Bjorn, thank you very much. But before I let you go, follow us on whatever podcast app you're listening to, whether it's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any type of podcast app. If you see a 5-star rating, give us feedback on how we're doing and how we can improve the show. And if also we did say some jargon, it's going to be in the show notes on hustleshare.com. And lastly, if you want to be part of the Hustle Share community, please join us on the Hustle Share community on Facebook. Again, Bjorn, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right, and I'll see you guys in the next episode. Peace.